And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks, presented by Zaxby's. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, I don't know if you've seen this or tried this yet, but yesterday, Mark Brady, the big boss, told us that you can, if you have Alexa, right, Amazon Alexa, you can just say, Alexa, play Move the Sticks podcast, and what do you know? There it goes.
How about that? That's pretty cool. That is really, really cool.
You've got the kitchen, you know, you're baking up a little breakfast in the morning. You gotta get a little Move the Sticks with your waffles. You just yell that out and then off and running, man.
I know. It should be a pretty good thing. That's pretty cool that it expanded platforms. That means more opportunities for people to tune in, because I believe this is the finest football podcast that you'll find.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's been fun to get some feedback from general managers have texted me this week that they're enjoying what's going on and what the content we're putting out there. And the one of the notes said, you know, it's just nice that you guys just give facts, you know, and you know what you're looking at. It's not just this hot take after hot take after hot take. It's based off of actually doing the work. So that's cool when you get that type of feedback, Buck.
Yeah, no, it's really good. Like, I think the one thing that we have tried to do is facts over feelings. Try not to be emotional about the things that we present. Try and look at it in a very objective manner, particularly because we both kind of sat in those seats where you're making those hard decisions. You try and keep it real and keep it honest in that regard, and then just kind of go from there.
All right. On today's show, we are going to talk about this news that's going on in college football, where looks like the Pac-12 and Big Ten are going to join the party. So that creates an interesting dilemma for some of these kids who have already opted out, some of which have signed with agents. So what happens with them? You know, Wyatt Davis, the talented guard for Ohio State, has already said he's going back to Columbus to play. So that's one that's on the way back. We'll see what happens with these other guys. Want to talk about that. Want to talk about some of the things we discussed over the summer in terms of trends that we were looking forward to seeing that came to fruition. Want to hit on that. Also going to take a look at this Thursday night matchup between the Bengals and the Browns. If you're listening to this after that game has taken place, just skip through that part. No.
For sure. Yeah, let's get to the college thing, because it's really fascinating to see I guess the about face that the Big Ten and possibly the Pac-12 are doing, now potentially saying that we could have seasons from both by the end of the year, which is crazy.
Yep. And, you know, I'm excited. If you just look at some of these individual cases, I think to me, Justin Fields is one that's fascinating to me. Like, this is big for him. If he can go out there and build upon what he did last year, now you talk about somebody that could really cement their status, you know, in the top 10, top 5, wherever you want to put him. But, man, he's got a great opportunity here for them to get some games in. And, if it ends up being 6-7 games, 8 games, that's plenty, man. That's a lot, in my opinion, to be able to get a real fair, true evaluation on a guy like that.
Oh, I mean, I think this is great. I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for them. Like, obviously, I'm concerned about the health and safety of all the players, but hopefully they get those things worked out. But when it comes to the ball part of it, I do believe it's a tremendous opportunity for some guys. We were worried about how this would shake out for those guys that I would call the borderline or fringe guys, the guys that weren't quite slam dunk elite prospects, but you didn't really know where they fit based off last year's tape. Well, now those guys get an opportunity to kind of show you how they can perform in 2020, and that will go a long way towards determining where you kind of stack them on the draft board. I think for a guy like Justin Fields, I think this is a chance to continue to keep his name in the conversation with Trey Lance and Trevor Lawrence in terms of which one is the one. Because Trevor Lawrence has been on the stage, he has an opportunity to play. Well, you know, those things leave an impression in scouts' mind. It's almost like the last one that performs, that is the one that is freshest. Well, now Justin Fields gets an opportunity to be like, oh, hold on. Wait a minute, I can play too. Here's what I look like. And then from a contrast standpoint, you now have Tate from 2020 to compare those two guys. And look, we don't know what's going to happen with Trey Lance. Like, we know he has the one game showcase, but we'll get a chance to consider that game too. But now you get a chance to look at the 2020 film and say, okay, who is the best fit for us and how we want to play down the line?
Yeah, and I'm hopeful that these guys that have even signed with agents, that this is a, you know, look, such a unique circumstance. And I think our buddy Bruce Feldman had a fascinating look at it yesterday, when he mentioned, you know, talking to the lawyer that's represented a lot of these players in their disputes with the NCAA over the years, he brought up the fact that Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big Ten, had said it's not happening, they're not playing. So once he was as definitive about that in the fall, and then those players made their decision to opt out, sign with agents. Obviously, if you don't know, when you sign with agents, a lot of times in the pre-draft process, they'll give you a marketing advance, you know, so they'll get you $50,000, $100,000, or what have you. So in a normal year, once you take that, I mean, once you sign with an agent and you're starting to get compensated, you cannot go back to amateur status with the college football. That they have to allow it this year. I mean, this is something that hadn't happened in 100 years in this country. So they have to allow those guys to come back and play. I mean, you talk about a bad look for the NCAA if they don't allow those kids to come back, if they would like to come back. Man, I can't imagine they would do that.
Well, I mean, like, let's be honest about it. Like, if the NCAA is coming back, if they're bringing football back, like, it's an economic-driven decision. And so if they really want to drive the economics, the best way that you can do it is to make sure that the stars are able to play and be on the field. And so if you want to maximize what you could possibly bring in from a revenue standpoint in terms of all eyes on the game, you have to let the stars play. And you have to be able to ignore or kind of cast aside some of the things that would be viewed as transgressions previously and say, hey, it's okay. We understand what the situation is. It's a unique set of circumstances. This year, we're going to give those players a pass and let them come back. But my thing is this, DJ, how quickly can players shift their mind and their mentality? Yeah. Because if you go from saying, hey, man, I'm out, I'm not playing, to, oh, now I want to go play. Like, that's a challenge, because we can train and be ready for those things. But when you kind of make that decision, it's almost like those guys who you're saying, like, hey, I'm thinking about retirement. But once you start thinking about retirement, you've retired because you're not fully engaged. So are these guys that we're talking about potentially coming back, are they fully engaged in playing college football? I think that is the thing that their coaches also have to figure out. Am I going to get the best version of whoever this top player is, because he has one foot in the National Football League and the other foot kind of dancing on the line in terms of being a college player?
Well, you know where my mind's gone lately. I've been in this like 80s movies kick, right? So we were talking about with Trey Lance, the one game exhibition as a parallel between Ivan Drago and Apollo Creed, Rocky IV.
Yep.
When I was the way you were just describing that about thinking it's over, That's Johnny Lawrence. They're getting ready to hand him the trophy, and all of a sudden, Ali comes running out into the official's ear, and he goes, "What? Daniel LaRusso's going to fight. Daniel LaRusso's going to fight. Yeah, put that trophy down, Johnny Lawrence. You're not getting that thing just yet."
Yeah, like that. I mean, that's a man to shift gears. Like that's a tough deal from a mentality standpoint, and you have so many other things to consider, right? Like the natural thought of mine for a lot of those players is they can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and that light is the National Football League. Yeah. And so now the tunnel is littered with a different set of risk factors. Not only do you have the health risk and injuries that you have, but now you have the COVID and the pandemic. And are you willing to kind of put yourself in the right frame of mind to be able to navigate through those circumstances and perform without being timid in those things and tentative on the field? Because we've all seen those players that when they get to their final season, they play different. And we talk about it. Hey, man, this guy looks like he was playing to protect himself. Looks like he was just trying to get to the season, to get to the draft. DJ, it's tough. You know, it's tough because you're dealing with real people, dealing with real emotions. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And the guy that I'm really looking for is, you know, like Sean Wade, Michael Parsons. Like,
yeah.
Do those guys change their mind, or are they already in? Like, nah, hey, I'm out. I'm gone.
Yeah. There's a couple guys at USC too, right? Elijah Vera Tucker, their guard, who's probably a second round pick. They have a defensive tackle that's very, very talented, who's probably second, third round pick, in my opinion, based off what I've seen. He's opted out. Does he come back?
Big tackle from Oregon.
Yeah. Oh, Penei Sewell. Yeah.
Yeah, Penei Sewell.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, whoa.
I've seen enough of you, big fella. Just, you know, hey, do what you need
to do. If I'm Mario Cristobal, do I make that phone call like, hey, Penei, I don't know if you've seen, but you know, we actually might play in it. few weeks. Like, I mean, I hope you haven't moved out of the apartment yet. Like, I know you're on a month to month. Like, you still have rent. You still are cleared to stay through September. We can go ahead and extend that check and get you back.
That's funny. You know, when I was looking at guys over the summer, one of the teams that, you know, talking about like national championships, which, you know, who cares in a year like this? Any games we get in are great. It's a cherry on top, you know, in terms of a national championship. I feel it almost feels weird talking about who could win that when we have some teams that aren't in yet playing more games than others and yada, yada, yada. But Penn State, Bucky, I mean, we've seen a lot of good players that they've put out over the last few years. They were loaded. If they could somehow talk Micah Parsons into coming back with all the other dudes that they have.
I know,
like,
man.
That's a legit national championship caliber team.
Yeah, so it makes you wonder why James Franklin and Ryan Day were protesting so hard to make sure that
they got
the season.
They knew what they had.
And the player just wasn't. It might not have been just for, hey, man, we just want what's best for the kids. Like, oh, no, we actually may have a loaded –
Another one, Michigan lost their right tackle, whose name escapes me at the moment, but who had only played 1 year, was only a 1 year starter. And there was some talk that Harbaugh or some people at Michigan were kind of upset that he left. And the kid's got a chance to be a first round pick. I understand where he's coming from, but now that the fact that they could have a season, maybe interesting conversation that they might have with him.
Yeah, you know, another thing that was interesting that happened up at Michigan, and this doesn't necessarily have to do with a draft pick or a prospect, but Dylan McCaffrey, their quarterback, transferred. Christian McCaffrey's younger brother transferred out of Michigan because he lost a quarterback job to a kid named Joe Milton. DJ Joe Milton is something different that we've seen at Michigan. Like, this
really
is an athletic playmaker at quarterback. He has a big arm. Having watched him or whatever, like, it's different watching him in 707 because I don't believe he's a 707 quarterback. But he's one of those new school quarterbacks that we're kind of seeing make their way up to the National Football League. He could be a very interesting player to watch as the Wolverines kind of bring in a new style that is a little different, from the way they played.
Can I give you my dream scenario? My dream scenario is that App State's quarterback, Zach Thomas, is a four-year starter. He's a senior right now. So McCaffrey ends up transferring to App State. App State has next year, has an undefeated season. We sneak our way into a BCS game, not the national championship game, but a New Year's Six game. And who's our opponent? Michigan. We get to beat Michigan with their former quarterback. And it would just be like, things couldn't get any worse for the Wolverines in regards to App State. We just take it to a whole new level. Come on, Dylan. Let's go, man.
You know, it's funny because Dylan McCaffrey actually would be a really good fit there. Like, it's interesting in watching him. He was a good player. I can't say that he was like an elite prospect when I watched him coming out of high school. Now, that's it. He can spin it. He can throw it a little bit. Not necessarily the mobile quarterback or whatever, but he certainly can play. I just don't know if he could play at like the highest Power 5 level. We'll see where he ends up. His dad, Ed McCaffrey, is the new head coach at UNC, Northern Colorado. And so maybe he makes his way there.
That's actually a good call. I didn't realize that. So he's the head coach at Northern Colorado, huh?
Yeah, so his dad, man, Ed McCaffrey, had a very successful run as a high school coach. I think he was coaching at Valor Christian.
Was it Valor? Yeah.
Valor Christian. They won a ton of games. They were really big. So he took the head job this offseason at the University of Northern Colorado. And so he's doing it. He's rebuilding the program. So why not bring your son there? We've seen that happen. Like, hey, have your son run the offense and do the thing. I mean, Could be very possible.
Before we get to some of the other topics, I didn't see a ton of the UNC game, but I saw some of the highlights. Man, that quarterback who we talked a little bit about with Coach Brown previously, he looks like he's even gotten better.
Yeah, look, Sam Howell is a talented player. I'm fortunate enough to see a lot of these young quarterbacks, like when they're coming up through Elite 11. He's funny because I would say, like, he's kind of like squatty body. Like, he's not the prototypical size. He's kind of like broad shoulder, but he's shorter. He has big-time arm talent. I think the thing that he struggles with going to his sophomore year, there's, man, so much hype around him. Like, DJ, he had more, like, 30-yard-plus touchdown passes than Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson coming into the season. Like, he can spin it. But sometimes when you hear all of that stuff and you begin to hear the fodder, sometimes you can press. Against Syracuse, he was pressing a little much. But I will say this. By far, he is probably the most talented quarterback that Carolina has had, and that says a lot considering Mitchell.
Go back to Ronald Curry. Come on now.
Yeah, he's a very talented, very, very, very talented spinner. He can spin.
Yeah. No, that's legit. All right, any of these other college kids you want to hit on, Buck, before we get to what's going on in the NFL?
No, but I do want to ask you this. Like, it's kind of funny, right, DJ, because the pause in the season, it kind of threw me off when it came to evaluating, right? So normally we would kind of dig in on Saturdays and start kind of paying attention a little bit. Some of it would be TV scouting, then you'll cross-reference it like during the week, like, oh, let me go pop in this tape or whatever. But because it's been such a different time, I can say that I feel like I might be a little behind when it comes to like having my thinking cap on when it comes to the 2021 draft, because I just haven't seen these guys and it hasn't been the same kind of hype that normally would accompany the season. So I gotta kind of shift gears, gotta get it going.
So this next week for me, I will probably the guys that have played two games, you know, the ACC will have their second game this week. So after that, that's when I have a little two-game scenario where I can pop in and get a little feel. I'll watch Trevor Lawrence against those first two opponents, see what he looks like, some of those
good
top guys.
I'll make it easy.
Yeah.
He looked good.
Yeah, good. Yeah, there you go. He's not bad. So get a chance to watch a couple of those guys that way. And then, to me, the party starts when the SEC jumps in at the end of the month. And the best part about that is, there's, I think, you know, some of them have a cupcake, but I think for the most part, that's basically conference play. So you're going to start getting some good on good.
Yeah, no, it should be fun to watch those. And so the SEC playing, and you know this, like typically most teams will plop what they consider their best scout in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times we talk about that conference being the hotbed in terms of producing NFL talent. And so now that they have a 10-game conference schedule, man, you get a chance to really see the guys play against top competition. I think it'd be a very unique set of circumstances. I also wonder if this year, because of the in-conference scheduling and the way that it breaks out, will there be even more SEC players drafted this year because we get a chance to see them play against each other more than we ever have?
I think that's a great point. I think you'll feel more comfortable. I know in talking to a baseball general manager, he had mentioned the fact that for them in the evaluation process, games aren't weighted equally, competition's not weighted equally. That to them, if a player performs really well in the SEC, which they say is the best baseball conference, so if he performs very well in the SEC and then performs well in the Cape Cod League, which is the summer league that brings in all the top players, they felt like that your hit rate was much higher if you drafted a player who had a track record of production in the SEC as well as production in the Cape Cod League. And I think with football this year, getting a chance to see all those SEC games, good on good, I think that's going to help. You're going to feel better about your evaluation once you get through that.
Well, I think so. And let's be honest, DJ, like back in the day when we were scouting, you kind of whizzed through those tapes early in the year. Like when they're playing these non-conference.
Well, a lot of times you wouldn't go out to, like you would take a little mini break. Like you go out and hit schools and camp to get all the background. And then during at least I did, like the early part of September, I might even take a week there and kind of just stay home and get plugged back in with your family because everybody's playing cupcakes. I don't want to watch that tape. I'll wait till they start playing some better teams.
Yeah, and you know, the rule of thumb was always they needed to have three games in before you could put a grade on them anyway. So
yeah.
I don't want to burn up my three games on games that I may not see them against the best competition. And so that's why when we would do it, especially if you're doing your area a couple times, you want to make sure that, hey, I want to get there after week three so I can have some legitimate games. And if I can get there early, as in camp, and then come back around the middle of the season where I see them play kind of the heart of their schedule, now I feel better about my grades. Well, now with these in-conference schedules, because everybody's going to be doing it, I think you actually may have a better opportunity to really have a pure grade than it was previously, because it was a little muddy when you're playing against different competition and different levels. But now that everybody's playing within the conference, I think you have an advantage because not only if I'm on the West Coast, I know everybody in the Pac-12, I get a chance to see all of that play out in front of me because I know my area so well. I think it could be advantageous for scouts around the league.
So in talking to some personnel directors, I was asking them, what do you got your scouts doing? You know, so obviously they're staying home, watching a lot of tape. They're not going on school calls. But the schools have been pretty open with them in terms of letting them in the stadium for their games. So those that are playing, a lot of them are being put in the stands, you know, way in different sections. Literally, you have your own section all to yourself. But they are allowing scouts into some of these stadiums to be able to watch games and evaluate players, at least from the stands. So that was encouraging. I think he said even a couple of them let him in the press box. I didn't ask him if it was Florida State, but based off the looks of that crowd, I'm guessing probably Florida State. What the heck? Come on in. Press box. Where else you want to go?
You know, DJ, like I have to say this as a scout, like, you think they're still serving food up in the press box at halftime? You know what I mean? Like, do you think I have to bring snacks?
I had a call with Money, because do the Charger games with our buddy Matt Money Smith, and we called last week's game against the Chiefs from a Spanish studio in Burbank. This week it's at SoFi, a home game against the Chiefs, so we'll be in the stadium. And I actually called him, like, Matt, like, will they have food for us there, you think? And he's like, bring your own food. I'm like, okay, I just checking. I didn't know.
So look, would they let it in? Because remember, like, normally when you come, well, I guess when you're media, they kind of give you a pass because they put a tag on the bag, but some of those places, they won't let you bring outside stuff in. So
I think the whole point of that, right, is that because they don't want to sacrifice their concession sales. Well, you don't have any concession sales, so why can't I bring a sandwich in my backpack?
Yeah.
I might bring a little cooler. I might bring a little, like, Ability Explorer.
A little roll. Hey, lunch pail. Bring your little rollaway. Your little rollaway cooler. Like, you go.
Oh,
that's
a great idea. I should go buy a lunch pail and pack Money at lunch and just bring him, like, a little lunch pail. That's a great idea. I'm going to have to get video on that.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. We were talking about college guys and being, you mentioned earlier about some guys that might kind of shut it down or try and save themselves, keep from getting hurt. And I was watching all these rookies. I compiled this top eight rookie thing that I do every week for the YouTube channel. And when I was looking at CJ Henderson from Florida,
hey, DJ,
Buck, you remember last year, though, he didn't want to tackle anybody. The cover skills
out,
were there.
He played lights out.
He was phenomenal. And like, as a force player, like, physical open field tackles, like, he was all over T.Y. Hilton. There was a couple times when you get a guy like T.Y. that gears down, and gears down, and he mirrored him coming right back down the stem. I was like, okay, that's pretty impressive.
He was really impressive. And DJ, it's funny because in these notes, I watched that game to talk about it. Like, he was all over the place, didn't back down. The first thing that I wrote down, man, his toughness and competitiveness exceeds expectations. He made tackles on the edge in space against running backs, did a great job of challenging T.Y. Like, his ability to challenge T.Y. and then the interception that he did in trap coverage, great instincts and awareness. Like, he really showed up. I think that is something that as scouts we have to kind of figure out when we're looking at a player. Hey, is this guy – okay, let's go back. Let's make sure we look at him the year before and see what the energy and effort looked like. Now, let's compare that to the energy and effort in his final season. What was he hurt doing in his final season? Well, if he's not hurt – can I get to talk to him and say, hey, did you kind of protect yourself a little bit? And some guys will give you honest answers. And some guys will tell you, like, man, to be honest, yeah, I was trying to get to the next chapter. But it is something that does factor into our evaluations. But it's also something that I would encourage scouts, like, hey, man, use the whole body of work. I know we get really caught up in the last year, the final season, but let's look at them the entire time. And let's try and make that grade a cumulative grade, not just a grade based off of the final season.
That's great. That's great advice for me, because that is exactly what I did. It was a warning sign to me, and it scared me. And I become a little risk averse at that point in time. Because you're like, man, what I've recently seen, I do not like that competitiveness. And that, to me, and we've talked about it, corners, that competitive spirit is a big part of your success there. And I questioned that with him based off what we saw this last year. I probably should have gone back and watched more of the year before. And I watched a couple games, but I probably should have gone back and watched more to see if there was a pattern of toughness that I could fall back and rely upon and say, okay, that old adage, if you can do it once, you can do it, you know. So that's a good tip.
Yeah, it's really hard, DJ, and it's hard. And here's the challenge, like, going back to some of the players that opt out. These players that opt out, let's use a Michael Parsons, for instance. So when we grade Michael Parsons, yeah, we'll grade him off of 19 tape. But will we give him the benefit of the doubt in terms of, like, hey, this is what he could be if he played 2020? Are we going to be on the positive end of that? Or are we going to be a little more conservative and be like, well, I don't really know. So should I kind of hold the line on my grade, or do I give him the bump up saying, hey, well, he probably would have developed this, this and that. I think it does present a bit of a dilemma and a challenge for scouts trying to do it. And I know all the scouts and GMs that we talked about said, hey, we have to use it like an injury season. I still think it's different, though, man, because when you opt out and you don't play, not that like we understand the circumstances surrounding it, but when you're looking at it, man, it just makes it hard to put that final grade on them because you just don't know. I think there's more uncertainty. And I don't know if you saw this, but Kevin Colbert said that they're going to grade guys differently that play in 2020 that didn't versus those that did not. And he said that, like, we want to see guys play in 2020 because it gives us more stuff. But he did take not really what I would call a hard line stance, but he did say that the players who are playing in 2020 certainly will get kind of the benefit of the doubt when it comes to the evaluation part of it versus those that don't.
Yeah, and I look, I think it's common sense what Kevin was saying. I think more so about if it's close, right? If the evaluation is close, you're going to lean on what you've recently seen, and just you have more body of work and a more recent body of work, it's a safer pick. He's not gonna take a tackle that played over Penei Sewell because Penei Sewell didn't play. Like, if Penei Sewell gets to where the Steelers are going to be picking, they're going to pick Penei Sewell. I don't care if he didn't play a snap.
Yeah.
So it is relative in terms to what the grade of the player looks like.
Yeah, no, that certainly matters. Like, I mean, look, I'm going to treat people, I'm going to give them every opportunity to be the best that they can be, and I'm going to grade them accordingly. But there's some guys that
fair,
you just know.
Fair but not equal.
Yeah.
Fair, but that's the John Wooden line, right?
Yeah,
treat everybody fair. I don't treat everybody equally.
Yeah, so I'm going to look and I'm going to make sure that those guys can play. But, yeah, it will be interesting to see how this plays out. But I think the bigger thing is I'm just excited for ball. Prayerful that everybody is able to make through this pandemic okay. We don't have any major hiccups or anything like that. But, yeah, I'm optimistic and I'm excited to get a chance to see some of these guys that we've talked about for a long time play their final seasons.
No doubt. And I think the whole key, at least on the Pac-12 side, and it sounds like the Big Ten as well, is the opportunity to get the daily testing that we have in the National Football League that's been so wildly successful. When the Pac-12 was able to strike that deal, I think it was Quidel was the name of the company.
Yeah, Quidel. You know, Coach Shaw talked about that on the podcast last week. He talked about Quidel and doing those things or whatever. But, yeah, man, dramatic shift. Now, I think he'll even be tested and challenged. He talked about coaches living by the calendar. In 1 week, the calendar has changed for him.
Change
so now you're like, hey, guys, we gotta get it going. We gotta ramp it up. If we're gonna start like with a Halloween start date, DJ, that's about what, 6 weeks?
Yeah, they ain't far. They better get practicing, man.
Yeah, about 6 weeks. I think they can do workouts like 12 hours each week, and I'm sure some teams have been taking some of the time to get on the field and do some of the stuff. We heard Trey Lance kind of talk about it, a little bit. But yeah, I think kind of have to ramp it up a little bit, get them ready.
All right, before we get to looking at this Browns-Bengals game, we talked over the summer about 12 personnel, and it was going to be a huge growth in the league in that personnel grouping, which is one back, two tight ends. And I do not have the numbers in front of me right now, Buck, but 12 personnel is on the rise. Let's just put it that way. We called that shot over the summer. And when you look around the league, I mean, I look at a team like the Philadelphia Eagles who struggled in that game. But, man, when you look at Dallas Goedert and what he brings to the table, I don't know why you'd be in anything other than 12 personnel when you look at teams like that.
To me, DJ, it's the most versatile personnel grouping that you can have, because depending on one of those tight ends. And typically when you have 12 personnel, you have a traditional Y tight end, which is your old school tight end. He's your inline blocker. He can stay attached to the tackle. He can do the stuff that you want to do in the running game. Also has route running ability and those things. You have him. But then the other guy, your H-back, is the one that's a little more movable. He can play out in space. Sometimes he can align in the slot or out wide. He can do a bunch of different things, maybe even go into the backfield as a pseudo fullback. When you have that kind of personnel and that kind of flexibility from one player, it creates such a dilemma for the defense, because from a defensive standpoint, you have to determine, do we want to stay in base or do we want to play nickel? And depending on who my nickel back is he big enough to be a factor in the run game? Because if he's not, well, then on offense, I'm going to batten down the hatches, put both of my guys in inline positions, and we're going to run to the side of the nickel back. If he's a bigger nickel, like we see some teams go to this big nickel package. Okay, well, let's move him and let's see if he can play in space. Is he good enough to line up out wide, and can he swim in those deep waters when it comes to coverage? And so if you have these tight ends, I think you have to make the most of it. And that's why I know people on the outside are talking about the Eagles tight end situation, because Zach Ertz wants an extension. Dallas Goedert is up. But if I'm the Eagles, those are my two best players. If anything, I might overinvest in the position because of what I can create with those guys. It's so advantageous for my quarterback and really for the team.
Dallas Goedert has a chance to be the best tight end in the NFL. Like, he's with his size and physicality and the way he moves and runs. I mean, that he was impressive watching that game. He looked like an all-pro watching that tape. But I mean, yeah, it's teams all over the league. Watching the Chiefs getting ready for this Chargers-Chiefs game, they have this kid Nick Kaiser, who they use as kind of a wing, and he's in their two tight stuff. That he does all the dirty work. They don't ask Kelce to do quite as much of that. Mm-hmm. Kelce's more detached, but finding ways to use guys like that, and to me, never been more valuable than it is right now.
Yeah, very valuable. Very valuable to have those pieces. I mean, look at what Baltimore has been able to do with their 12 personnel packages.
Oh, man, Nick Boyle was killing dudes in that game.
Moving people all over the yard and doing all the option stuff or whatever. But I think the bigger thing is big boy football. Like, people are going to this big physical football to counter some of the smaller defenses that are having success or that have had success in the league. And when you look at teams like the Tennessee Titans and the Baltimore Ravens and the way the San Francisco 49ers were able to succeed last year, all those teams had multiple tight ends on the field. Teams look at that, they copy that. Hey, these guys finished not only in the playoffs, but they were top rushing attacks. Maybe we need to take some of those things and do, and that's what we're seeing. And also, let's be honest, at the college level, we're seeing more of these basketball-type players make their way over to the football field and immediately have success without a lot of football training. It makes it easier to find those guys.
No doubt. And I'll get you – we'll get to the numbers. I'll circle back with the numbers on the next episode, and I'll have those 12 personnel numbers. We can put it into context for you. We have the Battle of Ohio here, Bengals-Browns. What are you looking forward to?
Look, man, I think the big thing is I want to see which Baker Mayfield shows up. Like DJ, our buddy Brian Billick would say that it takes about 32 games to determine if a guy can play. Well, he's nearing – that mark. And so we need to kind of see, like, hey, is he going to take the next step? Because unlike some of the other players at his position, the young players, he's been afforded all of the weapons that you can have on the outside. Two receivers in Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry. The tight end situation is good with Austin Hooper. Two big-time running backs. We think that he is in a system that really fits his skill set. So now it's on him to be able to go play. And because the regression from his rookie year has been so significant, I do believe that there are some questions that you have to have in the building. Like, hey, is this our guy? Particularly if the season goes awry and you're sitting there with an opportunity to look at maybe a Trevor Lawrence, a Justin Fields, a Trey Lance. I think the pressure is on Baker Mayfield. So I want to see how he responds to the pressure and the noise that's beginning to kind of rise around him on whether he's the guy or not.
I think he's got 40 starts under his belt, Buck. So that's the number that we've used in the past, because we've talked about 2.5 years worth of starts. You get to 40 starts, then we feel like you got a handle on him. That's exactly where he is right now.
Yeah, he has to get to that point, and everyone wants to see, like, hey, is he the guy? And so he has to step up. I think on the other side, for Joe Burrow, I want to see Joe Burrow and what kind of steps he – what is the next step for him? Because that two-minute drive that he ran at the end of the game, that was classic Joe Burrow. That was Joe Burrow, like, hey, I got this. We're spreading it out. Let me do what I do, which is play point guard. How much does Zach Taylor take from that performance at the end and say, maybe we need to speed the game up and let him do what he did very successfully at LSU? Could this be a breakout game for him to let him kind of do what he does against a defense that, let's be honest, really struggled against the Baltimore Ravens, particularly that passing attack with Lamar Jackson and company?
They played really bland defensively against Lamar Jackson and rushed four a lot. I'd be anxious to see if we see them really try and heat up Joe Burrow. They shouldn't. I mean, when you look at the tackles for the Cincinnati Bengals, Jonah Williams, you know, he's going to be a good player, but it's still a little bit of a work in progress there for him. Bobby Hart is not a good pass protector on the other side. I imagine you're going to see Myles Garrett go get a little bit of that action. But I'll be interested to see if they try and heat up Joe Burrow. And then for the Bengals offensively, they've got to get Joe Mixon going, and they've got to find a way to get him going in the passing game as well as the run game. So I think that he's their best player on offense. They've got to find a way to get him the football more often. And then when you flip it over to the other side defensively for the Bengals, they've been hit with some injuries on that defensive line. I would imagine coming into this game that the Cleveland Browns are going to try and run the ball down their throats. So it's going to be up to them trying to hold up to that.
Well, I think that needs to be the recipe for the Browns all the time. Like, the Browns had two of the better running backs in football than Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb. There's no reason why they shouldn't walk in. On the game plan, Kevin Stefanski should just write down the number 35. And 35 yeah. should be the number of rushing attempts that he should try to get to each and every week. Because when they get to that number, those carries will really help complement the play-action passing game. It really will create big opportunities for Baker Mayfield. And I think Baker Mayfield is a much more effective quarterback when they throw off play action. However you get to those carries, whether you throw early and run late or run early and throw late, whatever that looks like, 35 needs to be the magic number for the Cleveland Browns. They need to get to 35 rushing attempts.
Gosh, do you miss putting together your play sheet, Buck, with high school football being delayed? I hate to say it,
but like my play sheet has been open since the end of the year. Like, there's this play sheet that I have on my computer that just always kind of stays open, and I'm always just kind of like rearranging tinkering. Stuff. I call it the master install sheet. Oh, yeah. This and that. Oh, well, I'll wipe this away. And oh, no, let me put this back in. And so, man, if we don't get back the ball soon, I don't know what I'm going to have, because I'm trying to stay disciplined and say, like, hey, we're going to keep it like an in and out menu.
Yeah.
But it's hard, though, because you see some of these things, like, hey, well, maybe we can.
I like that.
Yeah. Like, some of like that. So it's interesting. But I think for the Browns and the Bengals, it'll be critical to keep the play sheet skinny, to allow their young quarterbacks to be able to play fast.
Oh, we got to get high school football back in California. Good night.
Oh, man. Whoa. I saw you. So your son, your little guy, got an offer?
Yeah, he got a little Division III offer there. Gosh, I'm going to say the name wrong. It's a school in Michigan, Philandia, I want to say.
Oh, okay, because I saw you post the thing. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, no, he was excited. It was his first offer. He's going into his junior year. Hopefully they get the season cranked up and see where it goes from there. But it's interesting to me, like something like that, what a like a little carrot, right? You know, they talk about the carrot or the stick. How do you motivate?
Oh yeah,
man, it changed his whole outlook. You know, like it's all of a sudden now it's like, it's not like, oh man, we got a long workout today. It's like, oh, we got a long workout today. Like, it just changes your whole look at life when you get a little bit of love there.
Yeah, no, a little excitement. I saw that and I was like, man, that's really cool. I'm sure he has to be excited. I'm sure you have to be excited, because I also think, DJ, like, it's one of those things, right? I think the biggest challenge that we both have as parents, but also as evaluators, because I think when you're an evaluator, you evaluate talent in everything. Like, we could be at the basketball hoop court, like, oh, that guy can play, or this and that. But with your son, you're always looking for, like, I think he can, but am I looking at it?
Do I have my dad hat? Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think he can play. Like, what exactly is his level? And I think when you begin to see offers come in or interest, you're like, okay, like, here's his viewpoint. Now I can begin to look at some of those things and be like, okay, these are realistic options for where he could maybe continue his playing career.
Now, I know we're kind of going off the grid here, but so is Trey been able to play any baseball at all through all this?
So he's played in a showcase event, called Show Ball. He played in San Bernardino a few weeks ago. He got a chance to kind of get out there. And look, he did surprisingly well considering the layoff. The problem that he faces, and it's unfair for all the guys in the 2021 class, particularly in baseball, there's such a logjam in that class.
Yeah, because all those guys are coming back, right?
All those guys come back. They have unlimited rosters, but then they could go back to the 35-man roster. And so for my kid, who is, look, by all accounts, I would say, like, look, man, he is probably a D2, D3 player. For sure a D3 player, maybe D2, because he's young for his grade, but he has long limbs and those things. It's hard because people are locked in and coaches want to, like, I don't know, I have to pause because I don't know who's coming back. We've already brought guys in for the 2020 class on top of the returners. And because Trey plays an outfield position, he's just kind of like, he's kind of stuck in never-never land. So we'll see. He has some interest from some schools, like, locally. but we got to pump it. I might have to plug into some of your baseball contacts to see what we can do to create some.
No, I'm trying to get him to the USD, man, University of San Diego. Let's go.
He loves it. So we took a. I mean, I can't say it was a trip, but we took a trip down there during the pandemic. We just kind of rode down. Not only did he fall in love with the campus, but the day that we were there, the Padres were working out.
And
So we got a chance to kind of peek over the fence a little bit and see those guys, and they were in their stuff. And so it was really cool. But look, man, anyone who has been to San Diego, and particularly USD, it ain't a hard sell.
No. Until the check, till the bill comes. That's when it becomes a hard sell.
It is not a hard sell for sure. Yeah, no, he liked it there. And we went by San Diego State as well. San Diego State.
Nice.
Yeah, the Tony Gwynn thing.
And building a new stadium, building a new football stadium down there where the,
how about
where the
that?
Qualcomm
yeah.
was. Yeah. Yeah. So next year, I guess for the next couple of years, they have to play in Carson. San Diego State's going to play where the Chargers have played at Dignity Health. Before moving into SoFi, so they'll be there for a couple years, but it'll be nice once they get that that stadium on campus. Well, anything else, Buck, you want to add before we bounce out of here?
Nah, man, it's always fun, man. It's great to have a big time football weekend. It looks like these weekends are about to get a little fuller with the Big Ten and maybe possibly the Pac-12 coming back.
Do us a favor, by the way. If you have Alexa, try it out. I'm telling you, it works. Alexa, play Move the Sticks podcast. I'm telling you, it's the best. You can't beat it. I want to encourage you guys to check out the digital show. We have the video show that's going to be coming out next week. It's our takeaway. Our takeaway podcast is also a video show, and that is 5 p.m. Eastern Monday on NFL.com and on the NFL's YouTube channel. So you can find it there where we do our 10 takeaways with our buddy Rhett Lewis. Encourage you guys again, leave us the ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. We do appreciate that. We've got a bunch of new submissions for the best high school player you've ever seen. So if you haven't done that already, jump on there. Let us know the best high school player you've seen. We'll continue to read those names and get those out, see if we can find some tape on some of these guys from way back in the day. I saw Reggie Bush, speaking of San Diego. Somebody did mention Reggie Bush as a high school player.
I can't even imagine.
I saw him play
in high school. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I saw him play.
But I can't even imagine that team, because not only, like, and I know we continue to go on, but Reggie Bush, Alex Smith, and people forget
Watkins.
Todd Watkins at BYU.
Watkins.
He could scoot. Oh, my gosh. Like, how you stop?
They had another running back. They had another running back, Daryl Hutsana, I think was his name, who went to Washington State, I want to say. Another Pac-12 kid. They were loaded. That was a good football team.
Man. Really?
But it was fun. They were fun to watch. Inspired by ongoing conversations with players, the NFL launched NFL Votes to empower and improve our communities by exercising the right to vote. Join the NFL family by registering to vote today and make your voice heard this November. Visit NFL.com/votes to learn more. All right, well, that's going to do it for us. I want to thank you guys for checking us out, staying with us here. It's been fun. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Six, presented by Zaxby's.